You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum. Ryan's here.
Hi.
Hi, Ryan.
Hi. Thanks for joining us and supporting the podcast. If you've never listened to this podcast before and you're here for Katie Segal and and Kurt Sutter, you're beautiful. Thanks for joining us. And if it's your first time and you enjoy this, then give us a listen. Subscribe. Follow us at Inside of You Podcast on Instagram and Facebook, at Inside of You Pod on Twitter. If you go to my Instagram, at TheMichaelRosenbaum, you can follow me on Linktree. We've got cameos. We've got cons that Tom Welling and I from Smallville are going to that you could join us. And we have an event not even downtown, in Hollywood, California, at the Bourbon Room. Ryan, you're going to be there.
I will be there.
Yes. The Bourbon Room. We're doing a Talkville live podcast. It's a Smallville night. We do a Smallville Nights with VIPs before. It's a little show. And then we do a Q&A and stuff with the audience and show some videos. And it's a lot of fun. The Wednesday, May 22nd, has been sold out. May 21st, not a lot of tickets left. Very few. So May 21st, in my Linktree, get tickets for that. A lot of cons coming up. Smallville Con, our first time ever in New Jersey, October 5th, is going to be great. Little advertisement for my new product called Rosie's Puppy Fresh Breath. If you want your dogs to have good breath, Rosie's Puppy Fresh Breath. There's a picture of me and my doggy on there, and it's a great product, and you can get it on Amazon. So write a review. I appreciate you. And a lot of other cool stuff. I got my children's book coming out later in the year, and I hope you're all doing well, taking care of yourself and, you know, going to therapy. Ryan, you still in therapy?
I am. I had one this morning.
How'd it go?
It went very well.
Yeah. Do you feel like you're in a better place?
Yeah.
With better help?
Subtle ad. Yes.
Yes. I like that. It just helps. It just helps when you talk to someone and you work through things. It's proven. Also, if you want any merch, Inside of You online store, Lexmas scripts, ship keys autographed, new tumblers. If you go to sunspin.com, you can get awesome band tumblers and hats and other stuff. And it's all there. There's a lot of great stuff. So you can also book the band, sunspin.com. You can book the band. We have a stage coming up May 4th. May the 4th be with you. 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Come listen to the band. Get to listen to some songs. We give you shout outs. We see all your messages right on the big screen in front of us. We play music. There's prizes, Zooms, all that stuff. Go to sunspin.com for more information, or stageit.com. And this conversation with Katie Segal and Kurt Sutter wasn't what I was thinking. They were so incredibly open, weren't they?
Yeah, they really were.
It was really eye-opening. It was humbling. And, you know, I always admired Katie, and I admire her so much now, so much more now after hearing her story and hearing, just, you know, they have a new podcast, and, it's great. Let's just get into it. Let's get inside of Katie Segal and Kurt Sutter.
It's my point of view. You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum.
Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum was not recorded in front of a live studio audience.
Inside of You is brought to you by Shopify, the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. If you don't have Shopify, I don't know who you are, because I use it and I'm not good with computers and figuring things out and navigating. And Shopify is so simple. I put products on there like t-shirts and mugs and hats, and it's so easy. Just everything's right there for you. It says add product. You add it. You upload the picture, you put a description, you put your price. It's that easy. You could track things like what product is doing great, what isn't, what's your top selling product. You could promote things and do discounts, and it's so easy and fun to do. I put like Star Wars 15, and you know, that was my code, and that's to get 15% off. And it's so much fun to use. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way up to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow.
Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered.
Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star.
Plus, Shopify's extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way.
Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/inside, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/inside now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/inside.
It's awesome having you guys here. And you know, I didn't know what to expect. I never met you before, so I figured she's probably really reserved.
Me?
And quiet. And not that you're not. And I didn't know. I just assumed you know, tough guy, tats, created a tough show. You know, you're probably unhinged. I didn't know. And now I walk in and immediately I'm like, oh, my God, these guys are like regular folks.
Regular folks. Absolutely. We're actors, remember?
Yes.
No. That's something I'm fascinated with in terms, not just because of the work we do, but the like individual lore, right?
What you expect.
Yeah. Not to already, you know, pump something, but on the thing we're doing, some of it is, one of my questions is, what is your book? What do people expect when you walk into a room?
This is your podcast pie.
Yeah. Like, correct. What do people expect when you walk into the room, and how is that different than who you are? Do you lean into it? Do you have to correct it? So, you know, the idea of
what you expect,
you know, like I'm just a fucking pussy, you know.
Are you?
I'm kind of a nerd.
I'm a cream puff.
I don't believe that.
He is. He really,
really?
Is. Oh, yeah. He's very, this is why he writes so well for women. I swear to God, he writes women really well. It's because he does have a very soft, strong female part.
I mean, that's rare.
I can be a dick.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure you can.
Totally.
You
know, but no.
Yeah. We could talk about that later, too. But so this podcast, because, you know, there's a lot of podcasts out there. Uh-huh. And, well, you know, the thing is, I always say when people say, should I do a podcast? I'm like, why are you doing it? Mm-hmm. Are you doing it because you think you're going to make money? Are you doing it because, you know, oh, I'm a celebrity or this? And if that's their sort of answer, then I'm like, you know, it's do you want something that you have? You're passionate about that you can talk to people about?
For us, honestly, we a little bit like, which I'm sure is the hook for you, is we joke, like we do no research, meaning we want to come in and get to know what, you know, where somebody came from, what manifested.
On the fly.
Yeah, like what manifested the person that everybody knows. And we're finding people like, we're like, oh yeah, I want to get to know more about that person. So it's basically having a small dinner party with someone.
About what you do.
We want to get to know. Yeah. And that's the hook for us. That's what makes it fun.
Well, plus because we are married and we have kids, and I think it's always interesting when you talk to people about, you know, what they brought from their childhood to now, how they're raising their children, how they're having a marriage, how they're, you know, what, you know, how are you fucked up and how?
Because we all are.
Because we all are.
Right. We all are.
You know, and how are you resolving that, or how are you making friends with that, or, you know, just sort of.
So it's really about, you know, family. It's this family, faith, education, hometowns, neighborhoods, nature and nurture, all this stuff. It's kind of like just going through it all.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. That's what we're discovering. Yes. And we're just starting. So we'll see what it
we're winging
turns
it
into.
Yeah.
Well, you wanted to do it, so there's passion behind it.
We've talked about it for years.
Yeah, and it was sort of, you know, and of course, it happened when we both got really busy, which is just the nature of how shit goes down.
Yeah.
And you just sort of have to lean into that and go, all right, we'll figure it out, you know?
Yeah.
So we're trying.
We're trying.
I like it. Husband, wife, in the industry, from different angles, talking about life and all the shit. And that's sort of what I get into.
We have a loose format. We definitely have segments and format. And our big selling point is at the end, we all eat pie. We have our guests pick their favorite pie and then tell us why it's their favorite pie. Ah. Like yesterday we did one and the guy said he doesn't like pie. So he brought what his husband likes. And then, so we asked him, so what about cake? Did you like cake? And he said, yes. And then he kind of told us about making a cake out of a Duncan Hines box. And that's what reminded him of his childhood. Yeah. And so
it became like one of the most sentimental of the whole like hour. And it was lovely. It was lovely. So yeah, I'm sure we'll stumble upon that kind of stuff as well. Yeah. You know,
I love it. I love it. I think it's, well, if you need a guest sometime, you
let me know. Yeah, you have to come over. We're just right down the street.
Let me know, man.
I think you're already booked.
I'll definitely do it. All right, look, there's so many credits that you guys have, and I can mention all of them. I can't mention all of them, but I mean, it's like, you know, Married with Children, Futurama, and Eight Simple Rules, Sons of Anarchy, Dead to Me. It goes on and on. There's a lot of stuff. And so what I like to do is sort of like take a trip of how we sort of got there. And, you know, as a kid growing up, Kurt, were you the tough guy? Were you like, okay, Katie's already shaking her head.
No, I was not the tough guy. I was tough in that I had to be emotionally tough because I was morbidly obese growing up.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, to the point of like over 400 pounds by the time I was 19 years old. So I had to... And the backstory of that is three other podcasts, but so I had to be tough in that if I didn't have skin, I'd be done, right? If I didn't have thick skin, I'd be done. And we learn how to manipulate that skin. And then, you know, I realized at some point that I was never going to get laid. So that's when
was your main focus. Like, really, that was the motivator. To get laid sometime.
I do not want people having to fear for their life if they're having sex with me. That was a big motivator.
How long were you this heavy?
It was progressive. It was just like sort of, I always say the more life demanded of me, the bigger I got. And then at some point when I was trying to figure out who I was as a person, I realized this was not the person I was supposed to be.
A lot of people don't figure that out.
No, man. And drugs and alcohol helped quite a bit in the initial transition.
Takedown,
let's say.
Like the original come down.
Like I lost a lot of weight really quickly. Look, I have an obsessive brain and compulsivity, and I just flipped the switch on that, right? So I went from, you know, the numbing out of food and chemicals to the control of the purge, if you will, like and all of those really bad life tools. I got laid, and
that was it. The incentive.
Yeah. But, and then the drugs and alcohol became its own little journey. And
did you have good parents growing up? Were they supportive? Were they there?
They were very much product. And I don't say this in a dismissive or even to make excuses, but they were very much of that generation. The post-World War II, my dad came from a big family. My mom came from a big family. Nobody talked about what was going on. Nobody talked about how they felt. You know, if you were a good provider, if you were kind, and they had no real tools to deal with whatever stuff I had, right? So I don't say this rhetorically, like they did the best they could, but they truly did the best they could. Was it enough? Fuck no.
No. Yeah, I went through enough therapy that I did this thing called EMDR.
Oh, yeah.
And I did it, and I didn't think, it's going to work. I'm just not a good candidate. And something happened, and it clicked. I've never been so emotional. But by the end of it, the therapist was like, what do you think? After all this, I remember this yelling at me, and you're stupid, and this, and... And then it was unsolicited. I just said, I forgive them. Mm. I forgive them. And that's a huge component into healing moving on. Because if you don't accept it and move on, you're kind of just living in the past. Mm. And you're thinking about, oh, well, this happened to me and I'm a victim. And I didn't always want to be, the victim. No. I just wanted it. So it's tough. Well, you, on the other hand, grew up with a family that was in the business, mm-hmm. a successful family. That, you know, I always say, wow, that's exciting. Mm-hmm. But twofold, longevity, being able to have a career that you've had is, I mean, you can get your foot in, you can get your foot in the door, but to stay in and continue to do great work and push yourself that, but also there was probably things missing that normal kids would have dealt with.
Absolutely. My family was in the business, but my father was a director, so I didn't see him much. This was in early days of episodic television, and so he was gone a lot. It looked good from the outside, but it was definitely, I have brothers and sisters, so I always have to tread lightly on what I say, because it's interesting how everybody has a different perspective of their upbringing. For me, it felt really isolated. I felt, you know, even though I'm one of five, I sort of felt like we all had our own little areas. And, there was a lot of, my mother wasn't well most of my life. My mother was, died very young, and so did my dad. So, and in terms of getting me in the door, I didn't want to be an actor. So I was a musician, mm-hmm. and that's what I was going to do. And my father, which I look back in hindsight now, he wanted to make sure I'd have health insurance. So he got me a SAG card by putting me in a couple of TV shows.
What were they?
I was in a couple of episodes of Columbo.
Wow.
And then I was in a TV movie with Dean Stockwell called The Failing of Raymond, where I literally played, and I was really stoned at this time in my life. I was like 15, 16 years old, smoking a lot of weed. So it was easy for me to, because I just played this like spaced out girl in a mental institution. But in hindsight, I realized I thought my father was always pushing me in a way that I didn't. I just wanted to play music. And I would say to him, no, I'm not going to be an actor. But now I look back and I think, oh, well, thank God he did that, you know, because that getting that card and getting in that door is really, it's major. That's a hard, hard move to get in.
Did you love acting once you started doing it more and more?
You know,
or was it always music first? Still to this day, do you think music still is kind of up there?
Well, no. Now I really love being an actor, but I'm one of the years that I learned on the job. You know, when I got my first series, which was a show with Mary Tyler Moore, I had no idea what I was doing. And I was so full of shit. I just acted like I knew what I was doing. And, you know, I'd toured with bands all through my 20s. That's just what I did. And I made records. And then all of a sudden I was in a rock opera, and then people from CBS wanted me to come in and read for a comedy. I thought it was a joke. I didn't know what was happening. So I'm really able to be like,
A chameleon.
Yes, I'm really, which is kind of like a character flaw and also a boon, you know, like a good thing. Yeah. So I could sort of melt into what, I mean, now I love being an actor, but I remember when I was on Married with Children, I had a band and I would go play on the weekends. And I kept thinking like, oh, I got to keep my real gig because this is not going to last. This is going
to go. But didn't a lot of people start coming to the shows?
To see Married with Children?
To that song, Married with Children, to your gigs.
I would get people to come, but I was like, you know, I couldn't go on the road really at that point. So I was just like in Hollywood. I was just like, you know, you're too young to remember all this, but
I'm 52 in July.
Do you know when the Viper Room was the Central?
No.
Used to be called the Central.
You called me out.
There you go. Do you remember Club Lingerie? Uh-uh.
I remember it. Remember the name. I remember Club Lingerie.
Okay. So I used to play Madame Wong's. Do you remember Madame Wong's? No, Man. Blue Lagoon.
I remember the movie, The Blue Lagoon.
No. There was a club in the marina. No, it was really like, you know, it was kind of the 80s rock, LA punk rock scene. And so I was sort of, you know, in my paper mini dress, rocking it.
You were a rock star.
Well, I wanted to be. I really did. But, you know, my path was more, you know, we're both in recovery. So I don't know if you know that.
No.
But drugs and alcohol really kind of took me down a dark path in my 20s.
Wow. How long have you been sober?
37 years.
37. What year was that when you?
1986.
Mm-hmm. Now, when did Married with Children come out?
1986. I was 4 months sober when I got that gig.
If you weren't sober, would you have gotten that gig?
Probably not. No, I don't
know. Or would you have survived that gig?
I wouldn't have survived. Yeah. I remember going to my first day on the show And I was in recovery. And, you know, I don't know if you know anything about it, but, you know, a lot of it is about humility and honesty and, you know, like not holding secrets anymore. I was a very secretive alcoholic. And so my sponsor, I remember my first day of work, she said, I said, I'm terrified. She said, well, go tell somebody you're sober. I said, what are you fucking kidding? I'm going to walk into these people I don't know. And I did it. And I introduced myself. And within two people, the casting director was also sober. And so I instantly felt like, okay, I'm safe. It's okay. Because I needed support. Mm. So,
wow.
Yeah, it was pretty wild. So it was a lot of new things at one time.
Is it hard to stay sober? Or as the years go on, is it just gets easier and easier because it...
This is what I'll say. Do alcohol and drugs speak to me? Can I be around them? Yes. Do they speak to me like I'm going to drink them? No. Every once in a while, if I'm cooking with something, I'll throw it down the drain real quick because I just don't, you know. It's, you know, alcoholism, we could have a whole podcast about this.
Sure. Yeah, I know.
Is it lives in the brain. Mm. It's a way of thinking. It's a way of perceiving. And so, yeah, that needs constant sort of spiritual solution, yeah. I would call it.
You guys meet when you were sober as well?
Yeah, it's interesting. We both got, she's 6 years older and we're 5.5 years older and we both got sober at the same age.
I like how you correct yourself.
Well, because I remind him.
Yeah, she reminds
five
me.
And a half.
5.5. Because I'd hear
God
about it.
God damn it.
Yeah.
it's not like he said 9.
Yeah.
But he has at times.
Sometimes,
yeah. Sometimes he'll bullshit and yeah. go, yeah, she's 10 years older than me. I'm like, no, but, dude.
We got sober at the same age, just, you know.
Different years.
5, 6 years apart. So we,
you have like 31.
I'll 31, on. Yeah. But we, wow. Yeah, we met at a 12-step room and, but.
That's where you met.
We met, yeah.
Was it love at first sight?
No. I did not ask her out. It was before I had my first gig, writing gig, was on The Shield. And I was a struggling artist and I knew, you know, who she was. And I thought, I'm not gonna fucking ask her out without a job. So, and then, so I waited and then I got a gig and I felt like, all right, I can say, here was my goal as an artist. And I don't know if you had this experience coming up as an actor. I just wanted to, when somebody asked me what I did, I just wanted to be able to answer them in one sentence. That was my goal.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I do.
So like, you're not, this is what I do, but this is what I want. Like I could just say, I'm a writer. And
you were.
And I was. And then I felt like, all right, now I can say hi.
And it was one of my, he was my, I've been married a couple times before. So this is my third go round and I had just gone through a divorce and I had two little kids and top of my list was you have to be employed. So when
thank
he
God
called
he didn't
me,
ask you out the first time.
No. Right? When yeah. he called me up and I said, and it was one of my first questions was like, well, what do you do? You know, what do you do? And he said he was a writer. I was like, phew, man. Because he looked really like, he was super buff and he looked like a trainer or something. I thought, oh man, this guy's, he like works out all the time and you know.
Yeah, I don't think you would have gone out with me if I said.
You were a trainer? Yeah. I don't know.
And so you went out and was it there was a big spark?
Well, for me there was. I think so. I kissed him first, he always says.
What?
Yeah.
Women never do that.
I did. He went in for like a little, you know, peck, and I was just, you know, on it.
Tongue.
And, but what I did take with me on my first date with him, on our first coffee date, I took my sponsor with me because I had such a bad picker. I had just really, I was like the queen
didn't trust
of bad
herself.
Boys.
So you're yeah. really.
Oh yeah. My God. Did I love, first of all, I'd never gone out with anyone that wasn't a musician. So I did not understand like, what this is about. That's how I related, you know. And I mean, I don't want to say that. I've had beautiful men in my life. They were just all a little like, nyeh. And so I brought my sponsor with me just to make sure that I wasn't like with an insane person. And within an hour, she like said, he's okay. He's all right. And she left.
It was also good because she and her husband loved The Shield. So
he was screened. I was pretty sure pretty soon, pretty quick. I liked everything about him.
How long have you been married?
We've been together almost 24 years.
24 years. Yeah. And you're still touching him.
I love him. I love him. We've had our shit. We don't marry for 20. We're married to almost 20 years. And you go through shit.
Yeah, we've hit the rocks a few times.
Yeah, we have.
What usually is in the middle? What causes that? Is it ego? Is it stress? Is it something else?
I think it's a combination of external pressures. For me, it was I got a little bit lost in the pursuit of money, property, and prestige, and sort of lost, not to get hokey here, but I kind of lost my spiritual center, right? And things that were truly important started to slide further and further and further and further down the list. And then when that starts to happen, your sense of self, your esteem is out the window, and then it's all self-sabotage from there on.
Wow.
And then, I hit a bottom, and, one of the best things I think that ever happened to me, and always was a friend and continues to be a good friend and even probably a better friend now, John Landgraf. I had lunch with John about a month ago, but I always, it took a minute but I ultimately, that departure from Fox/Disney was a bottom for me. And
do you know about
that? Was that the Mayans?
Yeah, there was the Mayans. I had to step away from
my own show. So the spinoff of Sons of Anarchy, your own show.
Yeah, I had to step away from. And it was, I thank him for it, because it was like it had to show up in some other area that, where I could go, oh shit, that can happen. And then it allowed me to sort of surrender a bit so I can go, oh, what else am I doing here that is not working, that is destructive, that is hurting other people?
Wow.
And it was a really uncomfortable pandemic.
Yeah.
But a beautiful one, in that everything got taken off the table. Work.
We were good by the pandemic,
I think. No, but I mean,
we went through a rough patch of like distance.
But even for me, the idea that everything got taken off the table and it was just me, my greater sense of self and awareness, and all my primary relationships. And it was like, all right, how do I do this? I can either run away from it or I can roll up my sleeves and do some work. And I think that's when we crossed that line back to found each other again, if that makes sense.
Wow. And that's where, that hits deep, what you just said, because I understand it completely. Mm. And it's one of those things where you lose sight of the things that you know are important.
Exactly.
With something that isn't that important. And sometimes I think what happens to hit rock bottom or to cause change in a person, and I've had that, is why I'm saying this, when you do something that you cause,
mm-hmm.
when you're responsible, it's just the worst feeling ever.
Mm-hmm.
Your ego shattered, everything shattered, and you could have had something beautiful, whether it's a relationship or a show or whatever it is. And the fact that you caused this, it's just destructive.
Right, right. No, the wreckage is, that's what recovery is.
But in hindsight, you learn. Yeah, see, it's like through that, it's how you process. It's what you do with when you fall down. It's what you do with it is really the lesson.
Yeah, so you guys survived that. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. I don't know how many times I have to talk about this, but it's so important. If you're sitting there right now and you're stressed or you're anxious or you have a lot on your mind and you just bottle it up and you don't know what to do, it's going to come out, and it's not going to come out in great ways all the time. BetterHelp has helped me substantially. Ryan here has been using it for a while. And don't you notice when you don't use BetterHelp, when you don't have therapy?
Oh, the weeks where I miss a session? Of course, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, the more you talk about something, even if you don't think you have anything to talk about, things come up and it puts your mind at ease. And we all carry around different stressors, big and small. And at times we keep carrying them around rather than processing them and letting them go.
When we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively.
Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down.
Therapy from BetterHelp is helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. It's for all of us. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. I think people think, oh, what if I don't like my therapist? If you don't, you switch them. It's that easy. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/inside today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/inside.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of the hunt. But are you getting the thrill of the best deals? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Macy's, Adidas, Walmart, Nike, Wine.com, Samsung, Lenovo, Sephora, and more. And even stack sales on top of cashback. It's easy to use, and you get your cash back through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
You know, we had come from a period of working together and, you know, and I don't really know how I survived it. I'm just not a quitter. I just, you know, really, you know, it's interesting when you're with somebody for a really long time. It's like you don't want to lose your individuality. Mm-hmm. So there was some part of me on some level that knew, oh, he's going through a whole bunch of shit, but this doesn't really have a lot to do with us. He just kind of thinks it has a lot to do with us.
Right.
But I sort of knew, you know what? This is not who he is. And
you told him that?
I think I told him that on numerous occasions.
Mm. Yeah.
We kind of were.
And I couldn't hear it.
He couldn't really hear it.
I couldn't hear it.
I just I'm just like gum on your shoe, man. Yeah. It just didn't go away.
Well, it's that you reach, and I don't know if you've had this experience in what you're talking about, but you reach that point where you realize, if I don't do the work now, I'm going to find myself in the same place with these same feelings, with a bigger stack of wreckage, and be doing it all over again.
And alone.
And I realized that's when I realized, oh, this really isn't about the two of us. It's my stuff in tandem with being married, being in a committed, like it was bigger than, you know, the solution was not fixing the marriage. The solution was me figuring out what's getting in the way, how I'm disconnecting. And then I can figure out if the marriage is working.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like before that, you know,
you can't make decisions based on how you're feeling in the situation because that could be catastrophic.
Well, he also had a very high rocket to success. I mean, it was like when I met him, he was like story editor on The Shield. And within 5 years, he's got his own show. And it was like
a phenomenon.
My sort of success has been, you know, slowly up the ladder doing the thing. So
well,
it never.
Well, yes. Yes, yes.
It never felt like, you know, I'm going from here to there. So it was kind of an interesting thing to observe that became so, you know, I come from this. So this was never like so like shiny and, you know, I just came from really hardworking people that, you know, if you live with a director, you see like they're exhausted all the time. And the only time I ever really liked my dad is when I went to the set. I was like, oh, that's kind of cool.
He's happy.
Oh, he's a happy guy.
He's nice to everybody else.
Nice, everybody loves him.
You know, that's funny because my dad is so good with other people and even like friends of mine. But I never like, I'm like, what the fuck?
Right. Yeah. Hey, Dad.
Hey, I'm right here. I'm your son.
Yeah. Can I change my name and put a hat on and have you? Yeah.
Oh man, that happens to me all the time now. Like I'll run into people all over town that knew my dad, and they say the most glowing things about him. Like he was the old school kind of wear the ascot director and loved actors and blah 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 blah. And you're just like, wow. That's, I mean, I'm happy to hear that.
Yeah.
But that's not who I
that's
knew.
That's not what you remember.
Yeah. Not really.
On Sons of Anarchy, you know, a lot of times you might think, wow, put my wife in this. Right. but I read that you said, or maybe I saw an interview or something, you was like, people are going to know, we're going to show them what you're really made of.
So sweet.
Yeah. I mean, I knew what she was capable of doing. It's interesting because when I pitched this idea, John Lindsay were the producers on it, and they loved the idea of Katie being in it. But the original conceit was more of a Sopranos idea that that Gemma would be the, you know, a little bit in the shadows, right? Would be more like the mother character, the Nancy right. Marchand character. And it was really John Landgraf who said, no, we want a trilogy. You know, we really like, if we're playing the Hamlet theme, which I pitched what I wanted to do, we need, you know, our our Gertrude, our Claudius, and our Hamlet. And that's when, you know, they pulled her front and center in the rewrites of the pilot. You know. But that was not me.
It was way different.
It was a little part and then it became a bigger part because the network wanted it.
Yeah.
So that
and they saw awesome. It. Like they saw if we're really going to play this theme, if we're gonna lean into it, then let's have this strong. And you know, some of it for John was creative, some of it was knowing demographics and doing the numbers in his head and blah blah blah. And but ultimately it became those characters, those relationships, you know, became the most interesting for me. Tara and the Jax Gemma stuff was ultimately the most interesting and compelling to write.
And it really, you know, I had a lot of trouble getting out of that comedy box.
Sure.
You know,
that's what she does.
That yeah, she's Peg Bundy. I mean, I would have to go in rooms and show people that I didn't look that way. That
right.
I could do. When I did Lost, I had to go in like three times for a little recurring arc. And so when Kurt wrote me that role, it was like, wow, finally, you know, I'm going to get to, because I don't even think I'm funny. I'm funny if you give me something funny to say. But I think I'm way more dramatic than funny. I just don't really.
It's so funny for you to say.
Well, it's wild. I mean,
you're always hilarious.
But I can do comedy because of music. I think it's just, you know, I hear the time. I hear rhythm. So that's kind of where that, I think.
And also a lot of dramatic actors can do comedy. It's easier.
I think so. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, sometimes that happens.
And sometimes not.
And sometimes not.
Sometimes not.
But I was given a shot to do it. And I thought it was, you know. He used to say, we're going to kill Peg Bundy. I was like, okay.
When you say that, I mean, obviously you had a great experience on that show.
A great experience. Mm. The best experience. And I love talking about her and
great.
But you know, I might not have felt that way if I couldn't have gotten out of that box.
Yeah.
You know, because I think there's a lot of people that don't, you know, that cannot get out of the whatever. If you're in somebody's living room for 11 years, you know, they do not want to buy you as something else. It's hard.
I mean, look at Woody Harrelson.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's doing okay.
Yeah. He's doing all right. Yeah. I think he's doing all right.
He's doing all right.
Yeah. That's pretty crazy. By the way, for the audition for Married with Children, you really wore that hairpiece?
No, but I dolled her up. She was written as like a slouch, kind of Roseanne-ish. And I went in, you know, dolled up. I just went in like looking a little bit hot and put my hair up and glasses. And they liked it. They liked the take. So they let her be that way. She was not designed that way.
Were you ever insulted or ever like, you guys have crossed the line on this line? This is too much. We can't say this.
You know, I was never able. Yeah, some people I wasn't, because I knew that my job as an actor, it wasn't my point of view. I'm just there to interpret what the writers are saying.
Right.
So no, am I as sexist as, you know, that show portrayed women? Do I feel that way? No, not at all. But people would always ask us these political questions about married with children.
Do you think it's right that they're exactly. I'm like, this is not the show that's making, it's like, it's like Archie Bunker.
Totally. And it, the whole point of it was to be funny. End of story. Yeah. So I had no, I was fine with anything. You know, it wasn't me. I was playing somebody else.
Yeah. Do you still talk to the cast?
Oh, yeah.
Everybody.
Yeah. We're on a group chain. Well, Eddie and Christina and David and I are on a group chain. In fact, we were just chatting yesterday, I do believe.
That's great.
We do.
Back to Sons. I'm thinking of the heavyset kid back in grade school or high school.
You can say fat.
Well, I think it's...
I'm just kidding.
But yeah, I know
you're saying. Yes.
But, you know, it's like, how does someone... I guess maybe you dealt with bullies. I don't know. But right. You write these tough characters and these tatted out bike riding guys. Where the hell does that come from? There's creativity, but there's also like, how do you know about this shit?
Well, I think for me, like I have to say, I credit Sean Ryan for this. Like I have a very, it's not warped is not the right word, but I have a I am an absurdist, right? And I have an absurdist sense of drama and comedy. And every potential pitch that any other executive or showrunner may have called security to come get me ended up being in the Shield. Like Sean saw the raw potential of who I was and then allowed me to feed that into the Shield to help the tone of that show and really create that world. And I loved it. Like it was just, I could not believe I was getting paid to tell those stories. And it just, I found my voice on that show. And then, you know, it's funny. I do, a buddy of mine works with the Army, does PR, and I've done stuff at Fort Irwin and blah, blah, blah. But I'm not a gun guy. I have a bit of a impulsivity issue, and I am not the kind of person. I'm not the person who should own a gun. And one of the reasons is because I write these worlds. And look, I love motorcycles. I have a bunch of them. I came across country in my early 20s on a motorcycle. That part is very real and I love it. But everything else I write about, I might as well be writing about wizards and fairies, right? Because it's very much fiction to me. And it allows me some distance to look at it through a lens that perhaps is a bit more absurd and darkly comedic than perhaps if I was like wholly plugged into that frame of mind, or if that's
might be a different show.
It might be a different show.
Yeah.
And then you do research, you know. I have a lot of friends with patches, right? And you do the research, you immerse yourself in the world, you nail down all the details so that the world is wholly authentic. And then I can tell the bigger, crazier, more absurd stories because nobody doubts the world.
Is it hard to sort of run a show, write a show, your wife's in the show, and dealing with, you know, we all have egos.
Mm-hmm.
It can't be easy balancing it out and, you know, dealing with all that. Did you learn a lot from that?
I did. It was, I had some of that experience on The Shield, but not really running the show. Like I ran the room a little bit. I loved being on The Shield. I stayed there till the end. You know, my last deal on The Shield was not for money, it was for time. So Sean freed me up a little bit so I could begin in transitioning into writing the new show. And I learned a lot from Sean, but you can't really teach anybody that, only because so much of it is, you know, oh, this happens now. Oh, this happens now. This happens now. And yeah, you have to, you know, the secret I've learned is really surrounding yourself with people who know more than you do.
And there were a lot of big personalities on Sons.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, for sure, back to your point, it was definitely a motley crew. And I would say the boys were the divas, for sure.
Oh yeah, they're all.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Oh yeah, always.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Yes, I would say that. You know,
the women were fine.
Charlie's fun. Most Charlie would say to us, "I love the days when I'm just with you and Maggie, because it was just." It was a little more chill, yeah. You know.
Everybody had their own thing.
Kind of,
whether
yeah.
it's, I want to get the fuck out of here, or...
or something, just, you know, it was a little more, it wasn't, you know, the boys were, they really did start thinking they were a motorcycle club. I mean, it was wild.
They were
man.
Into it.
Oh, yeah. They were into it. And yeah. they were in it outside of work and inside of work. Yeah. And it was...
Were there fights ever? Like,
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, here's the deal. There was no, look, you know, like there's, you have the actors who have their stuff and you have to navigate around. And, you know, even as I move, work on this new project, it's, I.
The abandoned.
Like, I know, you know, you can lay as much track as you can. You can prepare as best you can. You can hire the best people. You can engage, you know, but I know people are people. Right. And I cannot, and you just have to be able to roll with it to a certain extent and allow people to sort of be who they are. And then when it starts to undermine the bigger thing, then perhaps you need intervention. But I,
he was a great boss,
you know,
by
I,
the way.
I mean, here's the truth. Yes. I love actors. I am an actor. I love being around actors. I love the collaboration process. And as long as that's a two-way thing, and I feel like that respect is coming my way as well as it's going their way, then we're all golden, right? Right. It's when you feel like you have somebody that perhaps is
disrespectful,
doing their own thing, then it becomes difficult for everybody, you know? And I'm sure you've had that experience over time. And,
sure.
And, you know, it's challenging.
Yeah.
Shrink the Box is back for a brand new season. This is the podcast where we put our favorite fictional TV characters into therapy. Join me, Ben Bailey-Smith, and our brand new psychotherapist, Nimone Metaxas.
Hi, Ben. Yes, this season we're going to be putting the likes of Tommy from Peaky Blinders, Cersei from Game of Thrones on the couch to learn why their behavior creates so much drama.
So make sure you press the follow button to get new episodes as soon as they land on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts. Shrink the Box is a Sony Music Entertainment original podcast.
What's up, everyone? It's Reality Steve, your number one source for all things Bachelor Nation and reality TV. Every day, I'm giving you the behind-the-scenes juice and your info on all your Bachelor Nation stories and also interviewing some of your favorite reality stars. My name has been synonymous with spoilers, but I'm so much more than that. Give me a listen.
The Reality Steve Podcast, part of the Believe Network. Just search BLEAV on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Why do you think, let me ask you first, why do you think Sons of Anarchy was so popular? What was it that sucked people in?
The family element. I think it was basically a family drama. And I think that the world Kurt created was unique in that you got a view into a world that you didn't, you know, there were tropes about the motorcycle world, you know, mostly funny, jokey tropes about it. And so I think that the motorcycle world was almost second nature to the fact that it was about it was character driven. It was about the emotional lives of these people and that they're really going through things, not just criminal activity, but actual what goes on in your lives.
Kind of right.
Thing. That's what I think. Because more women, I mean, sure, there were tons of hot dudes on it. So lots of women loved to watch it.
Right.
But I think they also loved the women in it and sort of what that, you know, the picture that drew.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. I think it's, you know, I'm amazed and still sometimes that people come up to me, whether, you know, they're grandmothers or whatever, or young kids, or it's like I love the show. I would watch it with my dad. I would watch it with my grandfather. And I realized that.
Moms in the carpool lane.
Yeah. Like I realized that it was. Yes, the action, the leather, the motorcycles, like all of that stuff was popcorn that people go, ooh, what's that? But that ultimately, it's what Katie's talking about. It was that, you know, it was that family dynamic. It was that desperate search for who am I in my world and how do I redeem myself? It's all stuff that people weren't aware, perhaps. Not that they weren't self-aware watching it, but that it was never preached. So it was, you know, there was never conversations about, you know, I have to redeem myself or who am I as a man. But you, when you're able to touch lightly on that subject matter that perhaps other people are experiencing and may not have an outlet for, there's a cathartic quality, I think, that happens in something that then is a fun ride.
It's like anything that you watch. You know, what do you relate to? You know, most of us like to...
You have to relate to something.
You have to relate to something, and we laugh at ourselves, or we feel empathy. You know, we relate. That whole people who live, I guess, vicariously through what we do, you know, there has to be some sort of hook that they, you know, are responding to.
Yeah.
You know.
Were you shocked when you won a Golden Globe? Or did you expect it?
Let's no, I did not honest. Expect it. In fact, I was sitting with Landgraf and his wife, and Allie kept saying to me right before the night, she goes, "You're going to win. You're going to win." I'm just like, "No fucking way am I going to. I'm not going to win." And because I'd been nominated quite a few times before for Married. So, you know, I used to go to the Golden Globes and my category would be first and then I'd leave and I'd sit in the parking lot and watch all the famous people. And it was, you know, it was fun. So no, I didn't think that at all. I was absolutely thrilled that it was acknowledged, that the show was acknowledged. You know, I felt like, yeah, it was great that it was, you know, in my hand, but I felt that it was really great that the show was acknowledged.
When they said your name.
Yeah.
Do you just remember, was this an overwhelming feeling that came over you, or how did it just, I want to know like how it felt. I'm obviously great.
Yeah.
But like.
It felt pretty great. It felt great. And then I don't know if you've been to the Golden Globes?
One time I went.
You kind of have to weave your way through all the movie stars.
Yeah, we're in the, you know,
the
in
TV
shitty,
or in the shitty seats.
You're in the shitty seats.
So you're weaving your way Candy through all the movie stars. Exactly.
Where the fuck is she?
Excuse me, pardon me.
And then by the time I got up there, I think they pushed that button pretty quick about get her out of there. Yeah, yeah. And so I, but no, it was absolutely, the most fun was going to the party afterwards.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're walking around
with
your little globe. Key to any conversation.
And people would, you know, people I wanted to, like my daughter was with us and she wanted to talk to, who was it? It was, I can't remember. It was somebody that, you know, we don't know. We don't know anybody really. So we could talk to anybody with the Golden Globe.
And that's true.
Helen Mirren acted like she knew me. Yeah. I was like, wow, okay.
That was the best part.
That was fun.
Tarantino.
It was fun. Like,
right. Yeah. So I'm so excited. That's awesome. What do you look for in an actor when you're meeting with them? And I'm going to ask you what you look for in a director. So what is it that when an actor walks into a room, what's the first thing? Is it right away, he's right for the part. That's the right that I hope he can act.
Yeah, definitely some of it is knowing the presence that the character has and can this actor, does he carry that or does he bring something else that can change, you know? And then some of it is just understanding their, not process, but look, if especially if it's series, you know, these are people that you potentially are going to be in bed with for a minute. And you just kind of want to make sure they're not a dick, you know? So some of it is just vetting out the poison as much, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I've, you know, over the years, I've not hired people that maybe were better or right, more right or whatever, because I just knew that it wasn't smart. And I won't mention names, but absolutely. The immediate sense of like, when Nick Robinson, it was a video tape. I'd seen a couple episodes of Made. I saw some footage and then had a Zoom call with him. And I just, physically he was right, but he has this, almost homespun is an overused word, but he's a he feels like somebody's son, if that makes sense. And just had like a very nurturing presence that you can't manifest through a choice, right? That he just has that that quality that I was like, that's who this guy is, right? And then you take that, and then what does that look like when it's overburdened and angry, right? And so you for me, that's some of it. And instinctively, no matter how good of a take it is or how good of an actor the actor is, if there's a quality that I think just innately flies in the face of who the character is, that's a tough decision too, because you know it's, you can't really say, it's not like, oh, it was a bad idea. There's just a sense of like, that person's not right. You know, two of our oldest kids are both actors, and when in that process you try to explain to them that you have to treat every audition like it's part of the job. So the thing you're auditioning for today isn't for the job that's there for. It's for the audition 3 months from now that has, do you know what I mean? Yep. So that it is part of your job, so you can detach a little bit, because there are so many things that you do not know about how they're making this choice.
Right. And by the way, quickly, have you ever said, this wasn't a great audition, they didn't know their lines, but fuck it, that's the part, that's the person?
Oh yeah, like if somebody came in and they had a, you know, you can tell when someone's nervous or they're having, you know, and I have a great casting director, Wendy O'Brien, and Wendy has a great sense of that too, and can relax people, and usually you'll get a third or fourth read and you're like, okay, there it is.
You know. All right, so director, what do you look for in a director? Because I'm sure you've worked with some directors that aren't great.
Well, first of all, they have to want me.
How?
Well, no, not in that way. But, you know, it's interesting. People think, you're a journeyman actor like I am. I'm not like, you know, I don't get tons of people saying, would you like to work with blah, blah, blah? And, you know, that's just really not, I mean, it's sort of a misconception that people have that about me, I'm sure you too. Like, oh, there's just offers all the time.
Oh yeah,
right.
Why aren't you doing that? Why aren't you in that series?
That's exactly right.
I would be great.
Exactly. So
why aren't you dating Nicole Kidman? I don't know. I'll find her number. I'll ask her why. Shut the fuck.
It's so true. So yeah. You know, it's not like I have a lot of director meetings where I'm figuring out if I want to work with that director. I'm like, you know, do you like me? Did we, you know, so my experience with directors is more like when I'm there.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So I really love actors that are also directors. Mm-hmm. Like I love to work with Adam Arkin because he is an actor. He's a really great director. I love working with Kurt. Kurt is an actor who's also a really great director. So I like directors that have that experience. Right. Paris. Yeah. So that, you know, because my father, the director, went to acting school. He was going to be an actor. And so, but he couldn't stop laughing on stage. He was like, he just couldn't keep it together.
He was like, Jimmy, what's his name?
Jimmy Fallon.
Jimmy Fallon.
Yeah, couldn't stop laughing. So he became a director. So I like directors like that. Like I remember working with one director, I'm not going to say who it was, but he had no experience speaking to an actor. And I remember taking him aside. He was a friend of ours. And I said, you know, he was just starting out. I said, you know, you should take some acting classes because it will help you to understand a better way to communicate with us, because it's just so helpful to have that. That's my experience.
Yeah. The best directors to me are the ones that don't give you notes after the first fucking take. Because the first take is like the first take. Give me the second one and then give me notes. But I just, I'm just feeling this now.
Right.
And also they don't come up to you with a ton of notes. They just, if they have five notes, give the actor two. Say, hey, when you deliver this line, I want it to be more emotional, like it's hard to say. And then at the end, before you walk out, I want you to stop and I want you to turn. That's enough. Right. Do the take. Then we got that. If they think they could overwhelm you because you're just so smart that you could do everything. Sometimes you program, you're like, okay. But I want to be more natural and easy flowing and like not thinking about 20 things.
Oh, absolutely.
So that's what I look for.
Like, we just interviewed Paris Sparkley, who's a great director, and his whole thing is really simple. It's just to keep it simple. It's to really facilitate the actor and what they're doing, and to not overdo, you know, you're there to be of support. I mean, I have that experience with music producers. You know, the best music producers aren't telling you, you know, what note to hit, where to hit it. They're just kind of making the environment safe so that you can feel okay making a mistake, or, you know, just really trying something and sucking. You know what I mean? There's all that. So it's a big job directing.
Also, if you have a rapport with someone, I've had directors say, Rosenbaum, just suck less.
Okay. Right, yeah.
I know what you're talking about. I got it.
Less is more. Yeah. Less.
Rosenbaum, listen.
Okay.
The number one thing in the fucking acting world.
He used to always say to me, Kurt would say to me, you know, a little of you goes a very long way. In other words, take it down. You know what I mean? Yeah. Just, you know, so I understood
because
that.
You have that strength to just exude.
And you know, it's
you
like,
need someone sometimes to do
Well,
that.
He would always say to me, you know, if the actor is feeling like, oh, I just got that great take and I'm so, you know, the actor feels like they've really hit it, you know, but, you know, the editor and the director are like, you know what, that, you know, I don't want to see you cry. I want them to cry. You know, I don't want you to be over emotional. What we're doing is telling the story that affects the audience, you know? So
I say to the actor, which take did you really like? And when they tell me what take, I mark it and I never use it.
I don't blame them.
I'm right. Kidding.
No, but you know,
it's true.
No, but you know what I mean. There's a lot of truth to that because in their head, they're like,
I got there.
But by the way, you weren't as present because you're thinking of how great that take was.
Right.
Yeah. I like to go, I don't know what the fuck I did. Is that all right? All right, great.
Exactly.
You know, sometimes it's just not being like letting go.
Right.
Absolutely.
This was so easy. They're so open. It was effortless.
Thank you.
I really believe you have something special here. And I think if it's anything like this conversation we just had, it's going to be gangbusters.
Oh, that's very kind.
Just continue to do what you love and talk about what you want to talk about, and people will come to the party.
Thanks, Michael.
Thank you, Michael.
Yeah. So nice.
So lovely. So
thank
lovely.
You. Thanks for coming to my house.
Thanks for the coffee. This is great.
Thanks for allowing me to be inside of you. That's what I used to say. I don't say it as much anymore. Thank you for being here, guys. They were really good.
They were awesome.
They were really good. I was so like, I couldn't believe how chill they were. It was like, you know, I was nervous at first. I was like, oh, they're going to be difficult. I don't know why I thought that. I just felt, you know, it's a creator. It's a big actress. You never know what you're going to get. Completely the opposite.
I think for the most part, like, since they're willing to come out here to talk to you, like to your house, that's usually a good sign.
Yeah. You never know.
And they walk in the door, they get greeted by the dogs.
Yes.
And you can usually tell right then, and it's usually pretty good.
Yeah, you're right. But I was a little nervous, but they were great. So thank you guys for coming out. And again, if you like the podcast, follow us, write a review, subscribe, all that stuff. It's all the information is there. My Instagram at the Michael Rosenbaum for all that stuff. And couldn't do this without the top tier patrons. Join patreon.com/insideofyou. Become a top tier patron or just a patron and support the podcast to keep it going. We're the little podcast that could. And with your support, we keep going and we get some really great interviews. And thank you. Here we go. Top tiers. Nancy D, Leah and Kristen, Little Lisa, Yukiko. All these people still here supporting me. Guys, what is up? Thank you. Jill E, Brian H, Nico P, Robert B, Jason W, Sophie M, Raj C, Jennifer N, Stacy L, Jamal F, Janelle B, Mike E, Eldon Supremo, 99 more.
Next page.
Yeah, Ryan.
Next page.
Come on, read them out, baby.
Santiago M, Leanne P, Maddie S, Belinda N, Dave H.
Dave H.
Brad D, Ray H. Tabitha T, Tom N, Talia M, Betsy D, Rannon C.
Corey K, Dev Nexon, Michelle A, Jeremy C, Mr. M, Eugene and Leah, Mel S, Eric H, Chris, Oracle, Amanda R, William K, Kevin E, Stephanie K, Jor-L, Jammin J, Leanne J, Luna R, Mike F, Stone H, Brian L, Jules M, Jessica B.
Kyle F, Kaylee J, Charlene A, Brian A, Marion Louise L, Romeo, The Band, Frank B, Jen T, April RM, Randy S, Rachel D, Jen, Carolina Girl, Nick W, Stephanie and Evan, Charlene A, Don G, Jenny B, John, Jennifer R, Tina E.
Yeah, by the way, when you mess up, you can just keep going. You don't have to take it back.
I just felt like I wanted to take
it
back.
If I mess up, I just go like, what? Watch NG Tracy.
And everyone knows I messed
up. Tasha S, Keith B, Waffles, Heather and Greg, Ellie K, Elizabeth L, Ben B, and Pierre C. You guys make this podcast extra special. Thank you. I appreciate you. From the Hollywood Hills in Hollywood, California, I am Michael Rosenbaum.
I'm Ryan Taylor.
A little wave to the camera. Thanks for joining us again. And as always, be good to yourself. I'll see you next week. Welcome to Talkville,
the ultimate Smallville rewatch podcast. Guest star Sarah Carter as Alicia Baker.
Although I didn't really work with her a lot.
But Tom did, and they had some real big smoochy scenes.
Yeah. Should we talk about that?
Could there be any more sex? What was a 3-page makeout scene that just kept going? Good Lord. We get it. They have chemistry.
Jump in now or catch up on any of the past seasons of Talkville on YouTube or wherever you listen.